Our podcast distribution is made possible each day by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. And you can get a no-cost expert opinion while exploring your retirement options. Using Skype or the old-fashioned telephone, Steve can review your portfolio and offer some suggestions. There's no charge, no obligation of any kind. He makes just a limited number of appointments for these, so schedule your time. Toll-free, 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278, or you can go to investtalk.com and click on Schedule a Meeting. And now, InvestTalk. On radio, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is InvestTalk, above average investing for the average investor. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, KPP Financial President, Financial Advisor Steve Peasley.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of InvestTalk. It is December 10th, 2015. We only have about 30 more days left. And because we only have 30 days left, Justin Klein is with us today.
We only have 30 days left.
20 days left. 20 days left in the month, in the year. So, kind of.
So it's about that time for me to get on and talk about the end of the year and talk about the year's gone by quick and it's been interesting. That's for sure.
It always does. It goes by faster as you get older. Mark my words on that.
Yep.
The key to success in any endeavor, everybody, is most often just to focus. Focus your attention on what's important. Put aside what's not important. Focus on what's important. Then expand your skills. Expand your skills. On InvestTalk, we try to help you sharpen the focus and expand your skills at the same time. So that's what we're here about. We want to answer your questions, talk about the market, talk about the economy, talk about individual stocks or ETFs, whatever you want to talk about. We'll discuss it, as long as it's financial. Above average investing for the average investor is kind of one of our little hallmark sayings here. It's all about taking, you know, taking the straightforward principles that, you know, everybody can employ. You don't have to be a rocket scientist here. You just got to make sure you understand what you're doing. And you got to put time in.
And you have to your decisions have to be made based on common sense and facts and not emotions and stories. And a lot of people, especially early on, they learn the hard way by making bad decisions based on emotions and stories. And eventually they come around to the real hard data.
So, you know, one of the things that this time of year you should be thinking about is reviewing your holdings and rebalancing your portfolio with an eye towards tax loss selling where it's appropriate. For IRAs and tax-exempt accounts, you don't have to worry about that stuff, okay?
Yeah, 401ks, et cetera.
Yeah, you don't have to even care. You don't care. But that's why I said for when it's appropriate. You're coming at the end of the year, and you only have a few weeks left to determine your unrealized and realized gains and find out and losses and find out where your tax situation is. If you don't know how to do that, you can send me or Justin an email or give us a call at the office and we'll go over how that works. Okay? And you got to remember there's long-term versus short-term capital gains and losses that you have to think about. Mm-hmm. Long-term is over 12 months.
And then you have to understand your tax bracket. Yeah. And also if you're going to take gains, talk to your accountant, right?
Yeah, and remember the Roth rule. Mm-hmm. If you don't know what the Roth rule is, then you better talk to somebody who can help you with this, harvesting your tax losses, if that's what you need to do. Anyways, it's time for the Q&A part of the show. What money matters is on your mind is what we want to talk about. What is it? Are you talking about taxes? Are you talking about real estate? What's on your mind? We want to talk about all things financial. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hello, Steve and Justin. My name is Jerome from Rochester, New York. I'm 39-year-old with a long-term buy and hold strategy. I'm looking to build a portfolio mix with commission-free ETFs from Schwab and solid dividend-paying individual stocks. I currently own CHB, CHF, CHE, and CHA as ETFs from Schwab's and had only one individual stock, Chevron, at 96.20 cost basis. I sold Chevron recently to take advantage of the tax loss harvesting as the stock has been getting pummeled recently. I want to get back in the energy sector while I wait to rebuy Chevron to avoid a wash sale. Based on my long-term strategy, what do you think is the best blend of ETFs and stocks to have in my portfolio? For example, should I invest 80% of my money into ETFs and 20% into individual stocks? Also, what do you think about the fundamentals of CVX compared to Spectra Energy, which is a stock I'm looking to get into during my 30-day period where I can't get Chevron to avoid the wash sale? Also, can you comment on what a wash sale is? Thank you. I look forward to hearing your response. I'm an avid listener, and I find your show a valuable resource.
Well, that was a lot of questions and a very, let's start with a base.
He obviously planned it out. He kind of looked like he was reading.
I kind of like big cap stocks in the energy sector right now, even though they've been beaten up and they're still being beaten up. I still kind of like them. But buying an individual stock is risky. That's number one. I don't care if it's Chevron, Exxon. I don't care who it is. That's a risky point of view. And if you don't have enough money to buy 3 to 5% of about 20 different stocks where you don't get eaten up by the commissions to buy and sell, and for us, that's about $100,000.
Yeah, I would say six figures is when you start getting into individual names and paying, you know, the $5 or $10 in commissions per trade where it doesn't eat into your gains. You know, if you have $1,000 and you're paying $10 on a trade, obviously that really eats up your gains really quick. And obviously there's different shades of that.
So answering your question, you stay with ETFs unless you have enough to buy enough stocks to diversify your portfolio.
Yeah.
If not, stay with ETFs.
Well, maybe what you could do over time is buy just a couple, right? Single stocks along with the ETFs, and as he grows his nest egg, right, then he can start to increase the portion of his portfolio that is individual stocks. So, but it's also, you know, diversifying, making sure that you're not just in the energy sector. Now, he was asking about Spectra Energy in place of Chevron, why he's avoiding the wash rule. And the wash rule for everybody out there is if you sell something and say you have a loss on it, right, you have to wait 31 days to buy it back. Otherwise, you can't take the loss on the previous sale. So that's the wash rule.
So your loss is washed away.
Exactly.
If you buy it within 31 days.
Yeah. Now, I would say he's looking at Spectra Energy. Should he buy that, you know, in the 30 days until the wash? I would just say, I mean, it's not that important. I mean, you're just adding risk. And
just wait.
Yeah, you would be selling Spectra. I would just wait. Just wait the 31 days. You know, could this be the bottom in energy prices? Possibly, but it's, you know, not worth that, the minutia of dealing with that.
And one more point is you're talking about you're kind of replacing Chevron with this. Mm-hmm. These are two different areas of the energy.
Mm-hmm. Chevron's very diversified. They do oil, natural gas, refining, etc. And this is just a natural gas company.
Yeah, a transportation and pipeline natural gas company.
Yeah.
Very different. It's just very different. So just make sure you understand that.
Yeah, exactly.
The typical default benchmark, the S&P 500, may not be correlated to the assets that you actually own. So how to tell if your portfolio is a winner?
That's an important one. It's very important because a lot of people, they compare apples to oranges. And you know, they think their risk that they're taking is like the risk of the market, and it not always is.
Yeah, some people look at like a balanced fund, a balanced mutual fund, or a balanced account, and then compare it with the S&P 500. That's wrong. That's a comparison that will not work. Okay.
And some people even look at just straight bonds. I could have made 2% in the bond fund, and the stock market was up 10%. Well, I should have been in stocks, so I need to move my money in stocks.
Yeah.
Well, you're also taking more risk.
Yeah, that's a wrong comparison. Mm-hmm. You don't do that. That's your thinking is wrong.
Yeah.
So we're going to help with that a little bit. Also, there was a high yield bond. Remember what the different word for high yield is?
Junk.
Okay, their high yield bond blocked investors from withdrawing their money. I want to discuss.
I haven't heard this yet. I've heard this for hedge funds and, you know, different kind of private funds that are out there, but this is, you know, an open-ended bond or an open-ended mutual fund, and I've never heard them really stop, you know.
So don't think you can just get your money. Sometimes it's not that simple. You should cheer a rate increase by the Federal Reserve. Why should you cheer it? Why should you be happy about it?
After what's been 9.5 years since the last rate increase?
Yep. So why should you be happy? I'm going to talk about that. Justin and I will discuss why you should be happy about it. Not, oh my God, what's it? Yeah. And buyback and mergers for 2016, what kind of effect will it have? Well, what kind of effect has it had in the last 5 years on the market? How much do you think it is? How much do you think it has affected the market, looking at the past 5 years? And then how much the experts think it's going to affect the market next year?
I think that's going to be a very interesting topic because for me, I know that it's certainly it's not a minute point when you're talking about buybacks and mergers so far of the last 5 years. It's been significant to some degree. So I'd be interested to see your stats and get into those details.
Yeah, I don't want you to give away anything.
Well, because I think the listeners need to understand that. They need to understand how big of a part that's been. But a lot of people don't realize it. That's what I'm saying. And it's going to be good to talk about.
That's what the talking point's all about.
I'm excited for that one. Can we do that one first?
No. Okay. We get many clients and listeners looking for help with real estate advice. With licensed real estate agents and financial advisors on staff, we can help you with that. We really can help clients. We can help anybody with those kind of issues. We have a team that helps you with those kinds of things. And is this a house I can afford in retirement? A lot of people ask me that question. Should I be in this big house in retirement?
Or should I downsize?
Should I downsize? We can help you with that. Give us a call. If you want more information, click on Contact Justin or at investtalk.com or contact Steve. We'll be happy to talk to you about it. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're going to go talk to Glenn in Pleasanton. He wants to talk about Gilead Sciences. How you doing, Glenn?
Hi, Steve. How you doing today?
I'm good.
Can you turn down your radio?
Your radio. Turn it off. You got to turn off your radio.
My radio is off, I'm on a speakerphone, so it might be bad.
Oh, okay. Go ahead.
Well, let me get the question, and then I'll take it off the air.
Okay.
Okay, the question is, when you have a stock that keeps growing earnings like crazy, like Gilead, and yet the street seems to be against it for different issues, what should you do? Like, Gilead has flattened out for so long. What should you do in that situation?
Okay, good question. We've talked about Gilead Sciences before. We'll answer the question. And the biggest problem, what should you do? He's not asking if it's a great stock or a bad stock. He's saying that if it looks good and the street says it's bad.
Yeah, the street's not recognizing what you think is reality.
Then what should you do? Mm-hmm. Well, first thing in my mind is find out, make sure you understand why the street doesn't like it. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you don't buy it. Mm-hmm. It means that you have to understand why they are saying this, and then you have to decide if it's valid.
Yeah, you have to decide whether the street's view makes sense or maybe your view is correct. And with Gilead, the street's view is, while they are growing their earnings and they have been growing it dramatically, that's slowing down. And the main reason it's slowing down is because their drugs are too good. Their main drugs, I think it's called Solvedad or something like that.
I don't remember the name.
It's $1,000 a day, and it cures hepatitis C, B? Hepatitis
C,
I think. Yeah. And it's so good, it cures it. But then that's no longer a client and longer a customer.
Yeah.
After, 80 days?
It's like one of those science fiction books where, you know, the drug company has to cure you and then make you sick again so they can cure you again. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah, but because once they cure you, I can't sell you any more drugs.
This is a good example of a lot of people say it, you know, that the drug industry is in the keeping you sick industry, right? Because just like Gilead, if they cure you too well, you're no longer a client. So this is a good example of, you know, kind of what people say. Yeah. But anyway, but the Gilead, what they need to do is take all this money they've made, and they're going to need to buy another drug, buy other companies so that they can continue to grow their
earnings.
And they're
spending a lot of money on R&D. There's not like they're not. They're trying.
Yeah, they're trying.
But dependent on one drug is a problem.
Yeah, that's the biggest issue. So the question is, are they going to be successful, or maybe their customers are going to last longer than the treat expects? I would just sell it until... Unless you really, unless you really think the street's totally wrong, which I don't think they are.
Yeah. Our Invest Talk Anytime number is 888-99-CHART. I want to hear your question, any money question, 888-99-CHART. I'm Steve Peasley along with Justin Klein, and we're glad you're listening to Invest Talk. Okay, so how do you tell if you have a good portfolio, a portfolio that should work, and or that is working or is not working? How do you tell? Well, one of the basic ways is make sure you pick an appropriate benchmark to compare your portfolio with a particular benchmark. Mm-hmm. A lot of people always compare their portfolio with S&P 500. Mm-hmm. That's not necessarily the right benchmark for you.
Mm-hmm. It depends on what you're invested in. If you're in all big blue chip stocks, right, that are pretty much all dividend paying and ones that everyone kind of knows about, and it's diversified across different sectors, and it's all stocks, yeah, then you should probably use the S&P 500. But if you're in smaller companies that are big growth names or something like that, or you have a significant bond portion of your portfolio, then you're starting to get into different levels of risk.
Yeah, so you got to make sure you benchmark properly. And just in case you are buying index funds, there's no need to benchmark. That's what it is. That is the benchmark.
Yep.
You're in them, so don't think about that. And don't forget about fees. Fees can really eat into you. You know, you compare yourself with the S&P 500. Remember, there's no fees in the S&P 500. Mm-hmm. So when you have a trading fee or you have a mutual funds with the internal costs, mm-hmm. yeah, those fees eat into your returns. So you got to remember that. And don't overthink it. Mm-hmm. You know, try to keep it simple. Always try to keep it simple, but make sure you do apples to apples and oranges to oranges. Mm-hmm.
And try not to get caught up in short term, like what happened this year, right? Or the last 6 months, even the last 2 or 3 years. You know, it's important to start with understanding what type of portfolio you want, whether it's an aggressive portfolio, moderate, conservative, or whatever, and keep your focus on that, on making sure, maintaining that type of portfolio and making sure each individual name in that portfolio is doing well, whether it's a stock or a bond or whatever. And what a lot of people do is they see that their portfolio is getting 2 or 3%, and they see maybe the S&P earned 8 or 10%, and they I could have made more money. I think about how much more money I would have made, but they don't realize that they're taking a different level of risk, and they're taking the appropriate risk. And if they go and chase the S&P or other type of investment, they're taking too much risk for themselves.
And the problem with that is in recent years, you know, the S&P has done very, very well, mm-hmm. except for this year. Mm-hmm. So now everybody's realizing, you know, everybody was wanting to index. I'm going to index. And there's nothing wrong with indexing. But when the market turns on you, index, I just know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. People are going to be calling me up and saying, I'm getting hammered. My portfolio is going down. The stock market is going down. Well, that's because you're indexing. Mm-hmm. Indexing is a long-term game. You know, and people, because of recent great returns since the recession, the deep recession, are all in love with indexing. I saw this happen in the dot-com era. It repeats itself.
And people don't realize that the S&P, there'll be plenty of years. There are plenty of years to history where it's down 20% plus. And if you're just indexing the S&P and, you know, because you're focused on low yield, low fees, that's certainly fine, but you need to be prepared for 20% down years. Or in the last recession, right, from 2007 high to the 2009 low, the S&P was down about 50%.
Yeah.
So can you handle that? Can you handle
live
that?
Live through that?
Yeah. It's going to happen again. I know at least in my lifetime,
sometime,
I'll see another 50% drop in the S&P. I know that.
Yeah, sometime it will. It's going to. I'm trying to frighten you, but that's not what I'm doing. We just want to make sure you understand that what you're in and what you should compare it with when you benchmark it to something. Try to understand it. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. Use that to get to your question, to get your question to us anytime you want.
Yeah, hi, guys. I got a question regarding Green Mountain Coffee. I picked it up last week before they were purchased private and just got lucky, and it jumped up to 70%. And I bought it because they're at a 52-week low, and this was kind of holding on, going to hold on to it until, you know, maybe got a 30, 40% gain and kind of collect the dividend while I was waiting. Well, I got a early Christmas present, and they popped up quick. I'm wondering if I should just go ahead and take it now and run, or you think the company, I should hold on and there's more upside to this stock? Just kind of deciding on what I should do. I appreciate all your information. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.
Okay, when Company A buys Company B, they buy it for a certain price, and the stock that the company that being bought will go close to that price. Rarely does it go over that price.
It'll go over if the market thinks that the management of the company isn't going to approve, or they're going to fight, or they're going to try to fight for more, and they don't think that the buyout offer fully value, you know, they'll say, exactly, we don't think it fully values our assets or whatever.
Okay, so Green Mountain has an offer to be bought by JAB Holding Company for $92 per share, and today it's selling for $99.45.
$89.
Yeah, oh, I'm sorry.
$89. Yeah.
Okay,
so it's a few bucks away.
It's a couple, $3 away, and personally, I would sell it.
Yeah.
Because maybe, what if they go away?
Yeah, they could.
Then what?
Yeah, because remember, they're offering it, but they're also going to do due diligence and start negotiate with management and the board, et cetera. And these deals sometimes fall apart. Or maybe they're going to borrow a bunch of money, right, in the bond market to make this purchase, and they can't borrow that, you know, because
so
the bond market's
take the money
tough.
And run.
Yeah.
Be happy.
Yeah, your upside is very limited, and your downside's a lot more.
Yep. You're listening to Invest Talk. Coming up on the next half hour, working hard to keep it simple. Coming up on Invest Talk 101. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number. You can call right now.
Thanks again for subscribing to our podcast. Some market experts believe the purpose of a mutual fund is questionable when it has over 10 to 15% exposure to a single stock. Focused funds, leaving too much to luck. That's one of our talking points on the next Invest Talk. We hope you can join us then. This is Invest Talk for Thursday, December 10th. 888-99-CHART is how to reach us right now. Take a hands-on approach to managing risk. Start with a free risk analysis on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART. We're going to go talk to Frank in Danville. How you doing, Frank?
Hey, Frank. Hi, Steve and Justin. Happy holidays. Thanks for your
Thank
show.
You.
Really
Thank
enjoy
you.
It. I was wondering what you might think of a stock. It's A like Apple, F like Frank, S like Sam, I like Igloo.
Okay, okay. That's AmTrust Financial Services?
That's right.
Okay, they offer workers' compensation, specialty property and casualty, and specialty risk and extended warranty insurance. They are a $5.4 billion company, so mid-cap. They have very solid numbers, very solid numbers. From what I can see, I see nothing wrong financially. Justin, how about you on there?
It looks fairly attractive. The biggest issue for me is the chart is kind of it's somewhat bearish, I would say, and, you know, not super bearish. But, you know, you've been hanging around the 200-day moving average and kind of consolidating bearishly. And the whole sector, the insurance sector, and that's what this is in, has not been doing very well. And I think it has a lot to do with the bond market because, as Steve can attest, most of these insurance companies, when they take in premiums, they invest it in bonds.
Yep.
Right? And usually they're trying to get some sort of yield. And in this environment, they're, the 2% you're getting on a 10-year treasury usually isn't good enough, right? So they tend to go out on the risk spectrum, and I think that's probably what you're seeing with the insurance industry. So that's really the big risk is.
Yeah, so their investments in the insurance industry, you know, is mostly in bonds, okay? They don't you got to look at each individual company. Is it high quality or low quality? And Justin's suggesting that they've been reaching for yields just like everybody else, and they've gone through the lower quality end of the bond market spectrum, and that has been getting killed. Okay, so therefore, the investors are worried about these kind of stocks. Meanwhile, this particular insurance company is doing quite well with its earnings, sales growth. All those numbers are pretty good. Okay, and management owns 48%, so they're very focused, making sure they do this right. So it's a strong company in a weak industry. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I like the company, just not a big fan of the industry, especially in the near term.
Yeah. Are you a long-term holder? This is the kind of company you want to own, Frank, if you're a long-term holder. Okay?
Right, thank you very much.
Thank you for the call. The AFSI was a symbol, everybody. AmTrust Financial. Yeah.
One thing I liked about it, if you look at the previous earnings growth, it's been very steady from 2008. Obviously, that was the low kind of in the market. And it's the growing earnings pretty much every single year and very strongly. But that's starting to kind of wane a little bit. So, like you said, strong company in a weak industry.
High-yield fund blocks investors from withdrawing. Think about that for a minute. You own a mutual fund, high yield bond fund, and you want your money out. And they say, no. Or they say, we'll get it to you next week. Okay, we'll let you sell it 2 weeks from now or tomorrow, not today. The Third Avenue Focus Credit Fund, which is a $789 million fund. And by the way, it was a $2.4 billion fund earlier this year.
Meaning that's how much money was invested in it. And now, because of redemptions, it's shrunk considerably.
Yeah, huge. They say because of reduced liquidity and too much redemption makes it impractical to sell and refund money to those people who want it, because it will hurt those people who are still in it, because we make us sell at fire sale prices, and we don't want to do that. So you don't get your money.
Yeah. This is a good example of why the Federal Reserve's policy of keeping interest rates low and pushing people to chase for yield is pushing a lot of people out into higher risk spectrum, that higher than they should be, especially retirees. For example, this fund's year to date is down 27%.
And see, people, 27%. And people say, well, yeah, but it pays how much?
Right now, the trailing 12, based on what it's paid out in the last 12 months, it's yielding about 11%.
So it's paying me 11%. I want to buy it. Mm-hmm. But it's down 27% for the year. Mm-hmm. You have lost money for the year.
And that's based, the 11% is based on today's price. If you go back based on, you know, where it started the year, 27% higher.
It was probably 5%, 6%, 7%, 8%.
6% or 7%, yeah. So, you know, it's obviously people, you're not going to take even 10% if you're going to lose 27%.
Yeah, see, so this is the kind of thing, we've been warning about this all year, that these high-yield bond funds are not paying you enough for the risk that you're taking.
Yep.
And now you're seeing it come to fruition.
Yeah, we talked, near the end of last year, we had a conference and a webinar, and we talked about dividend investing and how a lot of people are chasing these yields, and it's not worth it. And the average credit quality for this fund is below B, single B. So that means you're talking triple C, which is really bad junk. I mean, junk is anything below triple B, or triple B, you know, so double B plus or below.
Right.
And this is a few notches below that on average. So that means some stuff is, you know,
really bad.
Really, really bad.
C and D.
Yeah, and that's probably why they're having redemption issues, because their junk is really junky.
And you can't find a buyer.
Yeah, it's hard. They're a lot less liquid when you get down there in that lower credit quality.
Yeah. 888-99-CHART. I had a very good question come to me today. Hi, Steve. This is from Tom. I won't give any last name. Hi, Steve. I'm a longtime listener, 20 years. Well, thank you, Tom, for that, by the way. And a subscriber to the weekly newsletter. Thank you for that also. I'm turning 70 in a few months. Can I take my required minimum distribution from my IRA? Because remember, when you reach age 70 and a half, from your regular IRA, you have to start taking money.
The government wants you to pay taxes.
So he's saying, can I take that money that I'm having to take, and can I open up a Roth IRA, and put the distributions from the regular IRA into the Roth IRA? Can I do that?
Which you would think it makes sense, because a Roth IRA is after-tax money. When you take that RMD, you're paying the tax, right? And you want to grow that money tax-free.
And his thinking is very sound because of that tax-free growth. It's a good question. Very good. And the answer is no. You can't do that.
Unless.
Yeah. This is where you can do it. If you have earned income.
Earned, meaning you have a job of some type, or you do some sort of work. Maybe you're 1099 or whatever it is.
Yeah, you can be 1099 or salary. Mm-hmm. And then you can open up a Roth and put money in it. And what is not earned income? Social Security is not earned income.
Pension is not earned income.
Not earned income. Dividends, not earned income. Yeah. You have to have your
RMD from your IRA, not earned income.
However, there's a little tiny loophole, and this is Tom. Tom, if you're married, have your wife go out and work. I don't care if she's 70.
Or maybe she does work.
Okay. And you can put that money, you can open a Roth. If she's working, you can put in money in a Roth for you based on
if she makes, if she makes $1,000, she can only put $1,000.
Right. Yeah. So that's the only little tiny loophole you have. Very good question, though. Appreciate it. Okay. So that was my.
I've heard a lot of people like that. You know, they're forced to take money out of their IRA, pay taxes on it, and they want to continue to grow it tax free, which makes sense. But you know, you got to have some sort of earned income.
Yeah, unfortunately, as an investor and as an InvestTalk insider, you now have access to investment resources that come straight from the desk of us, Justin and myself. Special watch lists, or we create those quite often. Maybe a stock idea, or not a stock idea. The list are those stock ideas, but they're really ETFs, most of them, not a list of stocks. And Justin puts in a lot of charting lessons in there. Our webinar archive is in there for you to look at anytime you want. So it's free. All you do is sign up at investtalk.com.
Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. That's the title of Steve's book, and it's a good answer to the question, how do I get started on my investing learning journey? Maybe this is a good gift idea for yourself. Look for the recommended books list on investtalk.com.
Hello, Steve and Justin. I enjoy your show. I own a stock called Activision Blizzard. It's ATVI. It seems overvalued to me, and I need to sell it. But stock keeps going up in value. My question is, how do I tell when a good time is to sell it? Thank you.
Okay, there's two kinds of people. There's three kinds of people in the stock market. There's bears, and there's bulls, and there's pigs. Don't be a pig. Okay? Activision, Blizzard has done very, very well. ATVI, as he said. How you can use a trigger. Okay, like a moving average. You know, if it breaks below 20-day moving average, sell it. Mm-hmm. Or 10-day moving average. You can use some kind of trigger. Mm-hmm. Justin, do you have a trigger that you could suggest?
Well, this is in a very strong trend. Activision upward. You know, it's gone from a low back earlier this year of below $20. What's this, $18 or so? Now it's at 38. So it's over doubled this year. Yeah. And usually stocks, that means it's one of the best performers in the market. And we know, based on history, the stocks that are usually the best performers the year before, some of the worst performers.
The next year.
Or at very least, they're just kind of ho-hum performers. So I like what you're thinking. You should think about cutting back this stock. It is overvalued. Revenue is growing nicely. It's in a great place. But what I would do is look to sell half of your position. Maybe wait, especially now that we're near the end of the year, if it's in taxable account, wait till the first of the year so you don't have to pay taxes. You know, it's not taxable income this year. So maybe wait till the first of the year. Sell a quarter of it. Sell half of it. And then have a tight trigger. And this would be the 50-day moving average for me because it really hasn't closed. It's got to close there maybe 2 days in a row. Then I would say, okay, now it's significant. It's breached the 50-day moving average and it's confirmed another day. So if it closes 2 days in a row below the 50-day moving average, then I would say, okay, you probably need to sell even more of it.
And just for you know, that's about 10% away from the price today.
Yeah, that's at about $35.25.
And one of the reasons why I like using the moving average is because if the stock keeps going up, the moving average keeps going up with it. Mm-hmm. And so you can continue to lock in and better profits.
It's like a rising stop.
Yeah. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. So should you cheer the rate increase because the Fed is meeting next week?
They're going to raise rates.
And everybody's
I'll say this. They're going to do something. Now, I think it's going to be interesting to see what that number is. So the Fed funds rate right now, it's at 14 basis points, 0.14. Are they going to go to 0.25, which right now is at the high end of their range, right? 0 to 0.25. Or are they going to go to, you know, 50 basis points, 37 basis points?
Well, if they go to 50, I think the market will not like that.
No.
Because they're expecting 0.25.
See, I think they're going to go to 0.25.
Yeah, I do too.
Not raise at 0.25. They're going to go from what, 0.14, which is it today, to 0.25. And then to me, I say, is that really a rate increase? Because your range is 0 to 0.25 right now. So all that means, to me, that's just saying, okay, we're going to the top end of our range.
Yeah. But see, it's a lot of psychological involved.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the psychology. It's okay, we're going to, this is, get ready for higher rates.
So, but why should you cheer it? We've had 9 years without an increase. 9 years. Why you should cheer it is because it will signal a pretty huge confidence by the Fed that we can handle it, that our economy can handle it. We don't have inflation. The dollar is very strong. Remember all the whining we have about how weak our dollar was? Well, now it's not weak. It's strong. So why would we not be happy about a rates increase?
Yeah, because if you look at what the Fed has been saying for the past 2 or 3 years, they changed their goals when it comes to employment of when they're going to raise rates.
Yeah, they did.
You know, at first it was, when we get down to, I think it was around 6% unemployment.
Yeah, they're going to
start
raising.
Then we're going to start raising rates. Well, we did, and then they said, I think we're going to do it when we get to 5.7% unemployment. And then we did, and they, 5.5. And now they keep moving it, and we're at, 5% right now.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember, but the end of last year, they said the rate, they were pretty confident that rates would be increasing in 2015. Well, here it is, December. Mm-hmm. You got 2 more weeks.
Yeah. Time's running out. You got 1 more meeting. It's going to happen. Yeah. I mean, the futures are predicting 90% chance. Yeah. So it's going to, unless something major happens.
But see, it's not bad news. This is what is amazing to me. Everybody looks at it as, I understand it's squeezing a tiny little bit of liquidity. I understand that. But that happened last year when they cut QE out. They squeeze it back then. It's really not going to be that impactful, especially when everybody else, when I say everybody else, I mean every other economy around the world is relaxing their money. They're pouring liquidity into their economies. And we're the only ones that are tightening a little bit. And that's, of course, why our dollar is so strong. So anyways, I don't think it should be all bad news in everybody's mind. And that's why I'm thinking, Justin, I'm thinking it's one of those cases where you buy the rumor, sell the news thing. You know, when they actually say, yeah, we're raising rates, I think I don't see the dollar going higher. I don't.
Yeah, I think the dollar, and if you look at the studies, show that when the Fed does raise rates, the dollar rallies into it and it peaks 3 weeks before they actually raise the rates. And then 6 months later, it's down about 5%. Yeah, and if you look at the dollar did peak, it did peak 2 weeks ago, about a week out. So so far it's held pattern.
Okay, we're going to talk about buybacks and mergers for 2016 and what they have done in the last 5 years to the stock market. So buyback and mergers for 2016. Goldman Sachs.
We got to get to this because I want to talk about this.
Goldman Sachs has a prediction of what they think is going to happen. So we're going to talk about that.
It's going to be higher or lower next
remember
year.
Remember we talked about Deutsche Bank and their prediction for the market last week I talked about that? Interesting. We'll talk about it. 888-99-CHART as we move into the final segment. Why don't you get in? Get in. Ask your questions. Any money questions, welcome. 888-992-4278. Is our number. Okay, buybacks and mergers for 2016. Goldman Sachs came out with their opinion. They think that for 2016, there's going to be $450 billion worth of buybacks and mergers next year. Now, remember, I'm always wanting you to take with a grain of salt these predictions by these smart people money. They're not that smart sometimes. Okay.
Well, I think the bigger question is, is $450 billion a lot? Is it less than this year? More?
It's actually quite a bit. It's about the same level.
Last year. Okay.
Now, corporations, just so you know, have been the single largest buyer of stocks for the past 5 years.
See, that's what I was getting at. That's what I talked about earlier in the show. I think people don't realize how much fuel the low interest rates, the bond market has created for the stock market by companies borrowing money simply to buy back their own stock.
Yeah. And, you know, to a certain degree, that's not really a bad thing if their balance sheets are very strong and they're borrowing very cheap money and maybe it's a good use of their money because they can't figure out there's nothing else better to do with the money. You know, in other words, you're not seeing a lot of capital spending by corporations to build a new factory or buy something that will grow their business. So what you're seeing is they're saying, well, what can I do to return value to my shareholders and buybacks?
And improve the price of the stock, because a lot of CEOs, they make more money if the price of their stock appreciates. And the theory is that I'm going to go out there in the bond market, I'm going to borrow at 4 or 5%, right? And then I'm going to buy back my stock, which maybe has a P ratio at 15, and the earnings yield on that is 7.5. So I'm actually going to make that spread, and I'm going to immediately create earnings growth.
And of course, that creates wealth.
And that creates, that creates more demand for the stock on its own, and everything looks good about the company.
Now, Goldman Sachs also is projecting earnings per share growth for 2016, 10%.
See, that's now, way too optimistic.
That's what they're projecting, and this is one of the problems I have, because that's way more optimistic than... Do you know what the earnings growth for the S&P 500 for this year? It shrank. It didn't grow.
And at the beginning of the year, they were probably... I know a lot of banks were predicting the same thing, 10% growth. Yeah. Well, in fact, it shrunk. And that's the issue, is that whole formula I was talking about, earnings yield 7.5%, you're borrowing at 4 or 5%, and you're automatically making money. Well, that works for a year while you're making money, but what happens if earnings shrink? And now your earnings yield, based on what you paid for the stock, is no longer 7.5%. Maybe it's 2% or 1% or negative, but you're still paying that 4% yield on the money you borrowed. So that's where the problems, I think, will start to arise during the next recession.
Now, will they make their numbers? That's the quick key. And the chances are good that they probably won't.
No.
Let's get one more question before the end of the show. 888-99-CHART. You're listening to Invest Talk.
Hi, Steve. This is Dave from Boston. I'm a podcast listener. I was wondering if you could give me your opinion on a stock, PCAR. I was thinking about adding some more. Thank you.
It's PACCAR Inc., PCAR, manufactures light, medium, heavy-duty commercial trucks and related aftermarket parts. It is a big-cap company, $17 billion size. And it's not expensive. It really isn't. Nope. And they've been able to grow their sales pretty nicely, but they're going to flatten out in 2016.
Mm-hmm. Earnings supposed to fall 6%. And now you're seeing revenues down 2% year over year last quarter, when over the past few years it's been growing its revenues in the mid-teens or so.
And, of course, those numbers impacted the stock. Remember, we always look forward. We kind of saw these coming, this little bit of weakness. It's not bad. Don't get me wrong. This is very good, strong company. But when investors see the weakening earnings and sales, they tend to sell a stock off, and it was, what, $65, and today it's now at $48.
Yeah.
So should you buy it? You're trying to pick a bottom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the chart is certainly bearish, and the odds are much better in the short term that it's going to continue to go down. But I think long term, it actually seems like a pretty good value.
Yeah. So, but you want to wait till it starts coming back.
Yeah, give you a sign that there's some strength, and right now there's no signs of strength.
Exactly. Our hour's up. Remember, you can see a long list of books that we recommend to help you gain knowledge and perspective about managing money and investing. Maybe there's a gift idea there for you. Just look for recommended books on InvestTalk.com. I'm registered investment advisor Steve Peasley, along with Justin Klein. And for everybody at KPP Financial, I do thank you for listening, and let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.